This is Illuminate, supposedly, although I'm gonna take a little bit of Illuminate time to do a little bit of what I call housekeeping, okay? Now, if you are a transfer student and you got one of these forms, you may not need it. So if you plan on not changing your major, you're perfectly happy with what you've already declared and you're pursuing, if you could hold that up and maybe let somebody that came in at the last minute who's a freshman that does need it, grab one, okay? That'd be great. For freshmen, you are not officially in a major yet. You are in our system as first year degree seeking, and that's partly because freshmen have a tendency to change their mind about what they want to study, especially when they get into classes, you know, and they go, what? This is what psychology is about? I don't want to be a major in psychology. You know, they do stuff like that. Or they get in another class and they're like, wow, evangelism, this is so cool. I think I want to do ministry. That kind of thing. So for freshmen, this is what we call Degree Declaration Day. And I ran out of these, I admit. So if you didn't get one, I have them in my office. Come by after Illuminate or this afternoon real quick and fill it out, okay? Or like I said, if you're a transfer student and I handed you one and you don't need it, if you would pass it to a freshman, I'd appreciate it. And let me explain more about this. At the top, you need to be sure and print your name, okay? I know that sounds crazy, but people get all excited about declaring their degree and sometimes they forget to put their name. The second thing is that what you need to know about the degrees is if you are interested in taking 12 hours of Greek, that's 2 years of Greek, then you probably want to choose Bachelor of Arts. If you have no interest in Greek, I'll make it simple. You need to declare Bachelor of Science. Associate's degree is a two-year degree, but we only have one major for associate's degree, and that's business, okay? So if you're interested in anything other than business, don't choose the associate degree plan. Now, below that, you're going to see all of your options for majors. You need to choose one major, okay? And in some cases, you may need to choose a track, okay? So, like, for instance, under practical ministries, you'll notice there's three tracks to choose from. You need to choose either intercultural studies or ministry leadership or youth and family ministry, okay? So if you're major that you selected has a track, be sure and choose a track. The only one that's kind of different on that is interdisciplinary studies. That's kind of a general degree plan, and it says concentration A and concentration B. Those can be in any two areas, so it could be like English and ministry, or it could be business and psychology. So it's kind of a real flexible degree plan, so if you pick that one and you have many interests, that might be the one you might want to choose. You just need to write in what you're hoping your concentrations will be, okay? Now, at the very bottom, you'll see that there are minors. Those are optional, but if you want to have a minor, that's where you would choose one, okay? So if you can go ahead and complete that now, for those of you who got forms, I will take them up now. If you did not get a form, like I said, please come by my office today and fill one out today, because this is Degree Declaration Day, and I have to have this information in the system before you can register for fall. So that's why it's really important for you to do this today, okay? Any questions about any of that? I went through it really, really fast. Okay. All right. Yes, ma'am. If you're a transfer student, you've already officially declared your major. And so unless you're wanting to change your major, and then I would recommend you change it today if you can, if that's the case. Okay? All right. Any other questions? All right. If you can, like I said, fill that out, hold it up when you've got it done, and I'm going to pick it up and turn it over to Mr. Hinton.
closely here for you. All right, guys, let's get started. How many of you have aspirations to be terrible? Like, it is your lifelong desire to really reek at what you do, right? Good, I am proud. It makes me proud. Like, how many of you guys fantasize? We all fantasize. I mean, everyone, it's a healthy thing. We fantasize. How many of you guys fantasize that you're running into the end zone at the Cowboys Stadium and you look back and the ball just like bounces right out of your hands and you lose the game? Yeah? Anyone? Or you like, you fantasize that you're on the stage? Yeah, that wouldn't be a fantasy. That's every Sunday. Okay, very good. How many of you guys, you know, you fantasize that you're on the stage and you're singing or you're wailing on your axe and you're just cranking through every wrong chord that you got and you're repulsing your audience, yeah? Anyone? Yeah? Or how many of you guys think about being on the playground and the bully comes up to you and you stand your ground and you just get pummeled and you get bloodied to a big heaping mess, yeah? Anyone? Usually when we dream, we want to aspire to be great, all right? That's just part of life. We want to aspire to be excellent at what we do. And I remember even as a little kid, I was playing G.I. Joe on my cousin's fort, right? I mean, Cobra the enemy was advancing. You know, we were fighting off against horrible odds, and we were defending the damsels, and we'd take a few shots, a few rounds, but we would muster our strength and fight through and conquer Cobra the enemy. I mean, greatness and desiring greatness isn't something you have to learn. I think it's just kind of inherent in human nature. You know, you guys are looking at your different jobs, your vocations that you're thinking about. Some of you guys are athletes or musicians or artists. And it's just our second nature to dream of being excellent at what we do, of making the catch, of inspiring our audience, of being successful in our business ventures. That's just a part of our God-given psyche. I love history. I love studying history because I love learning about the stories of men and women who have gone before me and the road that they took to power, the road they took to influence and greatness. And so I'm compelled to stories about Admiral Nimitz in the Pacific War, in the World War II, or General Patton, or Martin Luther, the founder of the Protestant Reformation in the 1500s. I mean, this dude was incredible, standing up against enormous odds. We take that for granted now. I mean, you put yourself in his position to take the stand that Martin Luther took. It's inspiring. And I love those stories. I love the stories of Alexander the Great. You know, when Alexander the Great was 30 years old, he'd conquered the world. I mean, I'm 36. This dude was younger than me, conquered the world. And the quote goes, "When Alexander saw the breadth of his domain, he wept, for there were no more worlds to conquer." That's powerful stuff, man. That's good stuff. And every one of us desires at some level to be great at what we do. That's not a hard sell, right? Y'all tracking so far? So even in Scripture, There are stories of disciples of Jesus that desired to be great. And I want to take a look at one of those stories as we dive in this morning. This is a story in Mark 10 about James and John. James and John were kind of wily. You know, most of the disciples, they weren't these clean-cut guys that you see behind the table at Michelangelo's Last Supper, these with the halos around them. These guys were scroungy and sometimes kind of dumb. You know, they were zealots. They were cowardly. They were doubters. These guys, these were just normal people. James and John, in particular, these guys were called the Sons of Thunder. How'd you like that in monocle, huh? Moniker. There you go. How would you like that, to be a son of thunder? And these are the guys that Samaria, when Jesus wasn't welcomed into their town, they said, "Lord, do you want us to call fire down from heaven to consume this town?" And Jesus is like, "You guys chill, chill." That was James and John. That's who I'm talking about here, okay? And so I wanna pick up here in Mark 10, verse 35, a little story about James and John as they're talking to Jesus. "Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him and they said, 'Teacher,' they said, 'we want you to do for us whatever we ask.'" Now, that's a good approach to come to God, right? "God, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." I think Jesus just kind of smiled. He said, "All right, what do you want me to do for you?" They replied, "Let one of us sit on your right and the other at your left in your glory." James and John came to Jesus and they said, "We want to be great in your kingdom. We want to be powerful." And I'm amazed at their boldness. I'm even more amazed at Jesus' response. See, the other disciples heard this. They heard James and John say, "Hey, we want to be at your right and at your left, even above these guys, even above these other disciples." Hey, there's a picture of them right there. "Even above the other disciples, we want to be the greatest in your kingdom." And the other 10 heard this, and they're like, "Yeah, what? You guys are crazy. Jesus has to call you off all the time. Why are you going to be the greatest? I'm the treasurer. I'm the one that walked on water. Why are you guys?" So in verse 41, when the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. And Jesus called them all together, and he says, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them. Their high officials exercise authority over them." He says, the world around you, when people are on top, they wear it with pride, and they stand on the backs of their followers. But Jesus says, "Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. Whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many." What's amazing to me is James and John came to Jesus and said, "We want to be great in your kingdom." What I love, though, is that Jesus didn't say, "No, what? Don't do that. Don't be great." Jesus meets them at their request. He says, "If you want to be great, here's what greatness looks like." He didn't condemn them for their desire. He just simply restructured what greatness looks like in the kingdom. See, it's easy for us to see in our world what greatness is. Greatness is getting on top. Greatness is dominating. I mean, we define greatness by what the world around us looks like. So if we achieve the top score, if we're the scoring leader on our team, then we're great because we scored more than everyone else. You understand? Greatness is defined by everyone else around us, by us being more popular, by us attracting more crowds, by us making more money, by us having more stuff. That's how the world sells greatness, right? Jesus takes this totem pole of greatness and he turns it on its head and he says, "If you want to be great in my kingdom, that's great, that's fine, that's good. Here's what greatness looks like. To serve, not to be served. To give your life away, to be a slave of all." See, a lot of us want to be great in God's kingdom. I think a lot of you guys have aspirations to be men and women of consequence in God's kingdom right now and when you leave this place, whether it's in ministry or in education or whatever it is you do. A lot of you guys want to be consequential in the kingdom. You want to be great. But I want to challenge you, according to Scripture, what greatness looks like. Because we all, I think, at some level, we all want to achieve that. We all want to be disciples of Christ who listen and obey His Spirit. Okay, that's our desire, but have you guys ever experienced an acute spiritual dryness? Have you guys ever experienced a spiritual depression? You know what I'm talking about? Especially if you're a Christ follower, if you're kind of still thinking about this thing, I'm Jesus or not, I'm not real sure. If you're not real sure, then you might not know what I'm talking about. But as a Christ follower, have you guys ever gotten into such a deep slump that just shackles your spirit? Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you ever been there before where you felt like your faith and your life are just going nowhere? Have you ever been there when you know you ought to read the word, so you read it because you ought to, but it's just not life like it used to be? Have you ever been there? Have you ever been praying and it just seems like, I am talking to myself here. My prayers are bouncing off the ceiling. Have you been there before? You're like, I mean, I still believe in God, I guess. But I feel like I'm doing this thing on my own. If you follow Christ very long, I think you'll find yourself there. And you know what, guys, I want to give y'all a heads up. Christian college students are particularly susceptible to that condition. I want you guys to understand that as Christian college students, you're going to find yourself here probably more than your secular university counterparts, okay? And here's why I believe that. We study the word all the time in a Christian college, and yet we often fail to apply it. We hear about power and peace and fulfillment and life to the fullest. And that's discouraging when we look at our own life, and sometimes our own life doesn't measure up to the stuff that we're studying every day in the classroom. I think you're susceptible because you're saturated by spiritual talk. You're around spiritual giants. You're around Mark Worley and Dr. Halen and these men that have this depth of wisdom and spiritual energy. And then we look at our own life and we fail to be releasing that same kind of energy. Do you see why I'm giving you this caution as Christian college students? A lot of times your experience here at a Christian college is a lot like spiritual constipation. Yeah, spiritual constipation, where you are taking in and receiving spiritual truth and receiving spiritual wisdom and being fed, but you fail to release it. You know what I'm talking about? And when that happens in our bodies, it's a little disgusting. But what happens? What happens? We get enormously sick. Your spirits are the same way. Your spirits are exactly the same way. And so I have this conversation with students a lot where they come and say, I just ain't feeling it. I love Jesus and stuff, but it just doesn't feel like it used to. I'm just not feeling it. And so when I speak with students who are going through those kind of slumps, my first question is always the same. Where are you serving? No, you didn't hear me. I feel like I'm in a slump and my prayers aren't meaning anything. I'm not finding life in the Word. Where are you serving? Where are you releasing energy and life and vitality? Where are you pouring yourself out into others? Well, I'm empty. Why would I pour myself into someone else? I want you to understand the physiology of the spirit. You guys understand depression is, have y'all been there? Am I talking to myself? I saw a few people like this, and a few of y'all were like, no, I'm good. Have you guys ever been in a spiritual depression? Okay, I've got like three of y'all. I'm going to talk to the three of y'all then. The rest of y'all can just listen in case it ever happens to you. Here's the deal. Depression is a very selfish thing. You guys ever notice that? Depression is a very me-centered thing. What's wrong with me? Why am I so messed up? Why is all this happening to me? Why don't people get me? Why can't I get this thing together? Me and I and me. You realize when we're in a depression, in an emotional and a spiritual depression, our focus is on number one. Why can't I conquer this thing? Because understand that when you serve and you pour your life into others, the focus is no longer on you, it's on others. So this act of serving, of pouring yourself into others, dismantles this selfishness that's inherent to depression. Do you see that you can circumvent the selfishness and the mire of depression by avoiding the main obstacle, which is you, by getting over yourself? Is the greatest way to conquer your spiritual, your emotional depression, to move into a place where the focus is upon others in your life. I want to take you to another place on campus. It's about, I think it's all the way up to 36 degrees, so it's nice and warm now, because I want to take you to a place outside real quickly. So if you guys would, grab your bags. We're not going to come back to this room. I want you to grab your bags, your coats. We are going over toward the gym and Newland Hall. I'll meet you there.